is the Grinnellian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grinnellian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grinnellian Bunker, my friends, you know what time it is. So glad to be back with you as always. Micah Hanks, the mouth of the South here speaking, and you have locked in. It is the Grinnellian Report. Always so glad to be your voice of reason in an unreasonable world. And I tell you, folks, it's just getting more and more unreasonable out there with every passing week, is it not? And hence, I'm always glad to be joined in studio by guys who keep me in line and keep my spirit high, Mr. Caleb Hanks. How are you doing tonight, Caleb?
I'm doing all right.
Okay, good. Tyler Pittman, also producer over here, who's watching the mainstream and the fringe airways, looking for facts, factoids, parallels, all that stuff. How are you, Tyler?
Searching the fringe. I'm in high spirits tonight, Micah.
High spirits indeed, my friends. And for all you high strangers around the globe on the internet, welcome to the program. Tune in live, of course. You can visit www.grinnellianreport.com, podcast and radio. We can also accept phone calls tonight. Phone lines are open if you'd like to reach us live. If you're listening in, 828-398-4886 or Grinnellian Report on Skype. Follow that information there at grinnellianreport.com, along with daily updates from news around the world, around the weird, I should say. Weird news from all over. Oh, gosh, I tell you. So last week, let's get right to it. Last week, we talked about this bombing, okay, at the Boston Marathon. Now, something we didn't talk about during last week's program, but which had made mainstream news right off the bat, had been an episode of Family Guy that had allegedly predicted a bombing at the Boston Massacre. Caleb had seen this. Tyler, did you see this?
I saw the YouTube video, and it was disturbing, but yeah. I've also heard that it could be a hoax.
Well, it
Wasn't
was
it pieced together.
It was pieced together, yes. And so, for those who have not seen that, there were the elements that you saw in the episode were apparently correct, but they were edited together to make it appear as though this episode of The Family Guy had put the sequence of events that actually occurred in Boston together.
Sounds like movie magic.
Apparently it was, and Seth Green?
McFarlane,
okay, whatever, either way.
Seth Green's on the show.
Right, yeah, I get my Seths mixed up. But anyway, he'd tweeted about this and said, you know, it was absolutely detestable what people were doing. That's just one of many instances. You know, what we talked about on the program last week was, you know what? Alex Jones, I think, spoke too soon. Folks, I'm going to tell you, our heart goes out to these people, but this just stinks of a false flag.
I'm down here planting my seeds.
False flag, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Gitmo Nation, where you can learn about false flags.
And seeds.
And seeds, yeah. You know, I mean, I love Alex Jones. He's entertaining. I think he's a bit
That's the key word. He's entertaining.
He's something. He's entertaining. A lot of people were upset about the fact that within hours, again, you know, and what's so funny, I think, is that people were speculating because he had spoken so soon after the news broke about the bombing at the Boston Marathon, did he have inside information? Was someone providing inside information to Alex Jones? Hell no. He didn't have inside information. That's his shtick. That's what he does on his program. He goes on there and he explains everything as being some sort of a conspiracy. One of the news stories we didn't get to last week was an Infowars.com writer had actually said that all acts of terror or all such events as what apparently occurred in Boston last week are psyops. You know, and on his program yesterday, Alex was sitting there saying, you know, I couldn't prove to you that fairies exist. I couldn't prove to you that goblins and trolls do or don't exist. And he was saying this in response to whether or not you could prove that acts of terror are not inside jobs, psyops, COINTELPRO, all these sorts of things that he talks about.
Well, you could prove that you can't prove it, but the psyop, the psychological operation is pushing it in your face.
Yeah,
because you must fear it.
Now, is there not a history?
Be afraid,
is there not? I am afraid.
Huh? I see. I'm a big Berkey water filters.
I am a little bit terrified right now. Oh God! Here comes another tick. Tangy tangerine.
Uh oh. This one clip is just not working for me.
Try it again, there, man.
There you go. Thank you.
Tangy tangerine. That sounded like a very tangy tangerine, by the way. You know. And it's funny because, again, I think that Alex says some intelligent things. I think he's a very intelligent guy. I think he's really got his finger on, you know, on the trigger, so to speak, in terms of, you know, next day news. He's on the cusp of things. As a matter of fact, one of the big stories was, you know, Glenn Beck this week had said he was going to be going after the White House and releasing information. He gave him the weekend to talk about this information, and that if they didn't come clean with it, he was going to talk about it on a show on Monday. And
you will be exposed.
And they will be, yeah,
do not seek the treasure.
Well, apparently somebody did. And so Alex Jones apparently talked about it on Sunday, in addition to mentioning the fact that, yes, apparently Glenn Beck had attacked him. Here's audio.
Glenn Beck, who basically, and I'm proud of this, you know, gets his show pretty much every day, most of it for my broadcast, that and Oprah Winfrey, kind of mixes some of that in. Here is the Forbes article out today. Glenn Beck just doesn't get America's strong character. It goes on in the article to say, well, Glenn Beck says he has proof the White House is covering up for Saudi Arabian connected to terror groups. And the Saudi Arabian papers are reporting that this gentleman does have connections to top-listed terrorists over there in Saudi Arabia. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if this is a rabbit trail, a distraction, whatever. But Glenn says he'll release that big bombshell info tomorrow. Now, obviously, Glenn, who attacked me earlier in the week for saying that there's evidence of false flag by someone, some other group involved in this, not just these lone people, there's lots of different types of false flags, must have noticed that we're getting, let's not exaggerate, 15, 16 extra million visitors a day just to Infowars.com
and there it is.
PrisonPlanet.com.
Of course, he has to drop the websites, Infowars.com and PrisonWars.
Dude, he sounds more and more like Harvey Fierstein every day.
Yeah, he does. And but, you know, I think it's pretty telling when you got people. Now, granted, I think Glenn Beck would like to think he's not part of the mainstream. But he, of course, is both, I think, taking talking points from the Alex Jones program and also ridiculing Alex Jones on his program just as well.
Yeah, I mean, I first became aware of Glenn Beck on CNN, the show he did on CNN,
yep,
which is about as mainstream as one could get.
I think everybody, if you're going to get to the kind of level of notoriety that someone like Glenn Beck is, and by the way, let me just say, folks, we're going to get into some stuff about Stephen Greer's Sirius film. We're going to talk about Tesla technologies later in the program. We're going to talk about Richard Dawkins saying that journalists shouldn't believe in God. We're going to talk about crazy CIA operations and the lack thereof, fooling burglars. We're going to talk about Bigfoot, UFOs, and all that good stuff a little later in the program. But this is hot news, and hence we want to deal with it right off the bat. Okay, for all of you paranormal listeners, there is breaking news. Bear with us. But then again, I notice we get few complaints from people about the way that we've dealt with things lately, because I think there is so much misinformation. Whether you're big time, little time, mainstream, whatever stream. Now, I think if you're going to get to a level of notoriety, coming back to what I was saying, like Glenn Beck has reached, you have to go through, I guess, more conventional outlets in order to do that, right? Yes, he started off as a radio host. Then he went to a television program on CNN. He jumped over to Fox News, and then he left that, and now he's independent. He doesn't call himself, I guess he is conservative, but he's a little more, you know, libertarian than the other conservative commentators that
you
see.
Don't forget his book, The Christmas Sweater.
The Christmas Sweater, of course, yes. Yeah, so, but anyway, coming to Alex's point, he says Glenn Beck basically ridicules and makes fun of him. Is that true? Let's find out.
When you remember the original interview, and the guy was talking about how he hung out with him, the interviewer.
Yeah, sure.
And there, I mean, there was a couple different places where he.
I am speechless. Later, we're going to get into Apocalypse Now. But what comes to mind is when we were there a few weeks ago, watching it in your home theater,
in your home theater, theater
when
your
I
house.
Was there 2 weeks ago at your house.
Remember?
Great.
I
totally
was there.
Clean.
Totally
you were working out super hard. I went and worked out with you at that private.
Stop!
Gym.
I'm just.
Remember, I was working out with you.
I didn't
and
know
you were
that
sweating
it,
like a pig.
I didn't know that Ed Schultz and Charlie Sheen had this kind of relationship, but
yeah.
It's nice to.
Well, they're hanging out in their home theater, Glenn.
Remember?
And they
Billy
were,
Puff, you were in your underpants.
Yeah, remember that?
I was wearing nothing but a hat.
Remember? You took that shower, and then I went in there, and I followed you in there, and you didn't know I was in there.
Right.
And then I was looking at you around the corner.
Right.
And then you kind of turned around, so I looked the other way, and I waited for
it
you.
It was kind of an awkward moment, but we both enjoyed it anyway.
And we just looked at each other for like 30 seconds, eye to eye, really close.
Right. As men, Charlie. Remember when I was at your house?
Yeah, we watched. Remember my tongue was on your elliptical?
Remember that? You went and took a shower at the gym, and I took your gym shorts, and I just sniffed them. You walked
walked in and I was just smelling. I just said, "Oh,
not in a weird way though."
No, I was just trying to make sure that these were
get your band
these
sense.
Weren't the clean
that's
ones.
All. Yeah,
that I could fold and put away.
And remember.
Right there by your gym.
There's more.
Look, I'm ready to go to work. I'm ready to go right now. And then they add the lie that, oh, you don't have a hernia. Well, you know what? I've seen your hernia.
Remember that? I've seen your hernia. Remember? And
I've seen it.
Let me touch your hernia?
Right. And I said, if I'm really good, Charlie, if I'm really, really good, can I touch your hernia? Or if I'm really, really bad... Whatever you prefer.
I can touch your hernia. Yeah, remember that? And then you had those canker sores, and I was just touching the canker sore with my tongue just to see if it was okay.
I wanted to test out the acidic content of your canker sore.
And I have like a pH balance thing on the end of my tongue.
And people say you don't have hemorrhoids. I've seen your hemorrhoids.
I've seen them. I've seen them.
Is that the weirdest comment in the history of broadcast?
Well, you know what? I've seen your hernia.
I would say I have to agree with them there. That is probably one of the weirdest comments ever issued on air. I've seen your hernia.
That was three Macho Man Randy Savages just talking together.
Well, that was the cast, of the Glenn Beck program. I have to say this. The point we're making is it's a little hard not to make fun of Alex Jones. Not just because of the raspy tone of his voice, you know, tangy tangerine and all this stuff. But, you know, I mean, the way that he deals with this stuff. You know, he came back and he seems fairly unfazed about all this, but he's entirely confident in the fact that despite the fact that and we talked about this on the show last week, he did jump the gun. It was a bit too early to be saying it was a false flag. He's convinced that people not only think the same thing, that the majority of the American public thinks this, but that they're getting the very information about this from Infowars.com.
Go to Alexa.com. Look at the traffic. It's like five times... No, that was about 10 times the previous record traffic we've had. So, obviously, the whole country, everybody I know, friends, family, people that have disagreed with me. I was at Barton Springs under a tree with a towel over my head because I didn't want to be, you know, in the sun, listening to people.
Wait a minute.
And they were all talking about how...
Wait. I was at Barton Springs under a tree with a towel on my head.
Vampire.
Wait a minute. What? Wait, can we get that again? Hold on.
I was at Barton Springs under a tree with a towel over my head because I didn't want to be, you know, in the sun, listening to people.
What is he talking about? Yeah. Anyway, you know.
He's talking about running out of a mosque.
I don't know what he's talking about, but, you know, I think that's what's incredible about Alex Jones. He's kind of a media phenom. This is a guy who is the anti-mainstream. Okay, he is he's an overt, open, public conspiracy theorist. You want to talk about flying saucers, man?
Dude, if you keep talking smack about him, he's going to fly to the bunker in a jetpack.
I heard you, Micah Hanks, you know, I don't know who this little punk is who goes on his show and talks about me.
I'd like to talk to Alex. I don't think Alex is crazy. It's just, I think, just like the Piers Morgan thing, it's the way he goes about what he says, okay?
Yeah, I don't think Micah dislikes Alex Jones or any of us here. But
are you saying I dislike Alex Jones?
Well, that whole clip we played kind of showed Glenn Beck and co. really... I mean, how many minutes did they spend?
I mean, they just go on and on and on. And I've been known to do a good Alex interpretation myself from time to time.
They get granted, a little bored when they have hours of radio to fill.
Every single day. Yeah, exactly. Of course. And that's the thing. And it just becomes, it's, you know, like the Insane Clown Posse or something. You know, they're up there just, you know. But, I mean, the point is Alex Jones, is he insane? Is he an egotist? Is he himself COINTELPRO? You wouldn't believe how many emails I've been getting from the listenership about this. Because here is probably the most prevalent modern American conspiracy theorist, okay? He's the most prevalent member of the media, whether or not he is mainstream, and of course he would dispute that. I don't think he is, but then again, at what point do you get so big that you sway the influence of the masses enough to the point that you become, if not, you know, independent or not, you can still be, I think, independent, but become, I think, a leading voice. Does that constitute being mainstream in itself? And so the big question here is, if Alex Jones is reaching the listenership that he claims he is, when we have instances that we hear about constantly in the media, we hear about Sandy Hook, we hear about Aurora, we hear about Columbine, we hear about Tucson, we hear about Boston last week, are we dealing with a conspiracy culture in America today? I think it's a legitimate question. Are we dealing with a culture of conspiracy that caters to the kind of information that guys like Alex Jones put out? Glenn Beck himself has also been, and the reason I think that, you know, it's important to bring him into the conversation too. Glenn has been accused in the past of being one of these guys who puts forth conspiracy theories as opposed to mainstream viewpoints. Both of these guys, Alex and Glenn, they've left the mainstream. They're doing their own thing, GBTV for Glenn, and of course, you know, Infowars.com for Alex. And so these two guys, they've become the mouthpieces for American conspiracy theory, and they eat each other. They go back and forth.
Well, it's crazy how prevalent conspiracy has become. I mean, if you look in any social networking, I mean, Facebook or anything like that, I mean, there is conspiracy, this conspiracy, that about everything in the media anymore. You didn't used to see it that much.
You didn't. And the thing is that I think that the climate has changed in America. Tyler, being a sociologist, I talked to him about this yesterday on the phone, and I said, man, we need to do a serious investigative, and, you know, we need to dig into this. We need to write something that looks at the breeding of conspiracy culture in America, because this is really a direction in which people are going. I don't know that it's necessarily always bad. I think it's good to question the status quo, but at what point does it become a bit dangerous? Well, the day of a bombing, which has now been, you know, what some are calling it, I will say, a terrorist attack. Okay. But the day that this happened in Boston, people are out there screaming false flag. And I'll tell you this. Now, we talked about the fact that it wasn't really, in my opinion, very cool for Alex Jones to go out there and start saying that. But I'll tell you this, okay? He wasn't the only one that was saying false flag. A lot of people were saying false flag, and this is something that I think is, again, an idea. It's an ideological perspective that has been brought forward in the Americans, maybe because of an antitrust for government and for media just as well. Who knows? And that puts us right in the middle of things, being an alternative media source. We are the Graylian Gang, and we'll be back right after this. Stay tuned.
The Outback. Andrew Nicholson's latest, Weird Australia. Real reports, uncanny creatures, strange sightings, extraordinary encounters. Weird Australia, the latest from researcher Andrew Nicholson. For more information, visit WeirdAustralia.com.
I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report, probing conspiracy culture in America today. Here in just a moment, we're going to be getting to a few notes on Stephen Greer's recent film, The Sirius film. Is it really a serious portrayal of the alien presence on planet Earth today? Now, I don't really think so. I'll tell you why here in a moment. Lee Spiegel of the Huffington Post, a good friend of the program here, already may have done so himself. But before we get to that, I want to come back to what we were talking about in the last segment, conspiracy culture in America. And also, I want to put this out to folks. If you have ideas or opinions you want to express, you can share those with us. Call into the program live tonight. It's 828-398-4886 to call. Skype users can reach us at Graylian Report. And you can also text us anytime, 828-367-7201. info@graylianreport.com. We'll put you in touch with us via email. You know, I have to just make a quick public confession. These guys know this. I literally called Tyler earlier today and I said, I don't even want to go live tonight. You know, the way that things are going right now in the media, it's hard. Like, and actually this sentiment was shared by Caleb when he got here tonight. He said, you know, there's so much crap going on out there, so much real news happening, that it's difficult for us just to focus on a story of a damn Sasquatch or of a Mothman. And there comes a time, I think, where, you know, when you are a serious researcher of Fortean phenomenon, as we all are, we are very serious about the research and the study of the unexplained. But the thing is that at times it becomes troubling when you are faced with real news. And again, I think what is a generally, a widespread, maybe even endemic sort of ideology in America today, especially, that you distrust what government tells you. You distrust what the media tells you. You know, you distrust what your teachers and your university professors teach you in school. I think that that's a good thing to question authority, you know, on all different fronts. But by the same token, at what point does it come to a point where you literally, you can't differentiate truth and fact from fiction and fabrication? At what point is it dangerous to question authority to the point of maybe extremism, you know? It's a really tricky question. And right now in America, there are, if there weren't a problem, folks, let me just tell you, and I think by the power invested in me, you know, by virtue of having to sit behind a microphone and talk to a large swath of not just the American public, but people in the UK, people in Australia, people in Germany, you know, people in South Africa, people in the South Americas. You know, we have a listenership that really spans the globe. When you have a large listenership of people who listen to you on a weekly basis or on a daily basis, and you're talking about news and current events, you have to be able to talk about this, not only with authority, but you have to be able to bring reason to the discussion. I don't know that Alex Jones always brings a reasonable approach with what he does. I'm not trying to attack him. I'm just saying that, frankly, I think there's a lot, an awful lot of fear-mongering, and it's catering to a growing ideology in America, especially, that does lend itself to conspiratorial thought, questioning whether or not we can trust government and authority in general. And I think that at times it can also become a bit dangerous in terms of lending itself to the inherent violence that we're hearing about constantly, you know, whether it be gun crimes or like we saw in Boston last week.
Well, it's super easy to start questioning everything when every single different mainstream news media is, like, right as soon as something happens, they start just reporting anything that comes in, and they are getting disinformation, or they're just getting inaccurate information.
The Hamburglar has released 2 bags of bomb.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, again, yeah, last week, gun rights have been an issue in America right now, okay? Gun ownership, you know? And then what happens, you know, in the wake of the Sandy... And again, Sandy Hook happened months ago, but the thing is, I mean, I'm sorry... A few months is barely enough time to recover from the devastating impact that has on our culture. And then there's a bomb. Actually, two, I guess what you would call improvised explosive devices. I think it was a Red Pill Junkie maybe in the chat room here who had said, at what point is a pressure cooker filled with bits of metal called a weapon of mass destruction? I guess it has everything to do with the intention of the individuals using it. But the thing is that, again, this is not something that is costly. This is not something that was... It was funny. I read a report that talked about how the sophistication of the weapons used made it very difficult for people to... essentially, for people to believe that these two men, apparently believed to have been of Russian, you know, Chechenian descent...
It was sophisticated. I mean, it sounds like a hamburger helper recipe, you know, put some balls in it, check it out with some screws.
Well, that's exactly right. People had talked about the sophistication making it difficult to believe that two men had acted alone. I'm sorry, pressure cookers, okay, filled with ball bearings.
I mean, you can find extremely more devastating bomb recipes on the internet.
That's another thing that people are talking about. So there are two opinions on this. One, that these men couldn't have acted alone. And then on the other end, these men must have acted alone because this was obviously, what would you call it? I mean, it was
you
like...
You can't act alone if you have a friend.
Well, but it was these two brothers, at least according to the conventional sources, you know, that are putting forth the information that we're supposed to believe about this. Now, I'm not questioning it personally. I mean, I question everything, but I'm not making that statement in a way so as to try and encourage others to question it. I'm just saying the information that we have right now is that there were two men who acted alone, but then again, this is also being called by some an act of terror, in contrast to other instances recently, you know, the Sandy Hook shooting, the Aurora...
Lone gunman.
Oh, well, yes, there was a lone gunman, yes, at the Aurora, and actually at the Tucson as well, Gabriel Giffords.
Lone crazy guy.
You know, and then, of course...
And some people calling...
With Glenn Beck's book in his house.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, you know.
And then Christmas people. Sweater.
And I'm not trying to demonize Glenn Beck either, you know. I think the point is that... Is there a message that at times caters to a growing contingent in the American populace, people who think along the lines of distrust, general distrust of authority, and therefore, and it's incredible because look on your social media, okay, look on your Facebook and on your Twitter, look at the things that people are saying. Nobody seems to think that the story we are being told is the complete story. Now, the question is, and...
before you get into that...
Yeah.
Circling.
The quote, I believe it's attributed to Timothy Leary, question authority is always preceded with think for yourself. So if you're just out there to question authority because that is some kind of coping mechanism you've developed, it's something, I mean, I can see in my own life at different stages where I had that kind of like, yeah, question authority.
We all go through that, I think.
The dead Kennedys.
Yeah,
they had some real cool points, but then it's like think for yourself as well. Whenever you go into this, what is a logical conclusion to deduce from the information that's constantly bombarded into your face? You know what I mean? Like you can't just if you're just following that line of thinking, question, be difficult.
That's that
like
in when itself you did it is with a line parents, of thinking.
Like, why? You know?
Yeah, it's, yeah.
There's a point where you need to understand. A responsible citizen will understand, you know, enough about society, their culture, their own life, different, you know, sets of data like that to draw reasonable and educated opinions about things that they see.
Okay, that's a good point. Reasonable and educated. Now, that's the thing, again, and this is the whole reason that I brought up Alex Jones last week to begin with is because, again, within hours, we didn't know anything, and within hours, Alex Jones was jumping up and down saying, I'm sorry, but this thing stinks like a false flag. Yeah, other people attacked him for saying that, because, look, dude, we don't know anything right now, and I don't think it's ever safe to assume. It's okay to question, but it's never safe to assume, and so on this program, we tried not to assume, and you know what? The overwhelming response from our listenership has been very good. People have said, you know, thank you for pointing out that there are people in the media who would be willing to, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, sensationalize a tragedy, okay, for purposes of maybe increasing their listener base, maybe, you know, catering to their overall message. You know, anyway, Caleb, I know you want to get in here. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I don't really. I just wanted to say
war. It's fantastic.
Well, especially when you can profit from it. So, okay, look, anyway, enough about that. I wanted to open the show. I wanted to get that out of the way. I wanted to talk about that. I think it's important. If you want to share your thoughts about that, we do have the phone lines open tonight. You can reach the program by phone at 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach us at Graylien Report. That's Graylien Report. And then, of course, you can email us info@graylienreport.com or send us a text message anytime during the program, 828-367-7201. If you visit graylienreport.com, the podcast and radio page has all that information for you just as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts. In the meantime, not to focus too much on that. It's just, again, you can't deny it. Folks, you look at the news, you read the news every day like we do, okay? You will see things are not what they used to be in America. Things are not what they used to be in the world. We are living in a very different world from what we were living in several decades ago. And you know what? Something has changed. We have to take into consideration what has caused that change and whether certain information that we talk about, and more importantly, the manner in which we talk about that information, is conducive to healthy or unhealthy interpretation of the actual facts.
But it doesn't help when it's like a Christmas present that keeps getting wrapped with layers and layers of wrapping paper. You want to get and see what the truth is, what surprise awaits.
Like a Christmas sweater or something like that.
But yeah, exactly. Each day there's a new layer of paper to rip through and see
a new layered
bottom. Well,
one thing that you have to take into consideration is look at the economic model that we are currently in. We have never been in such a strange, changing, metamorphic state of economic, you know, standing. Everything is changing because so many jobs are becoming, you know, mechanized in factories and stuff like
Bitcoin.
That. And like,
yes,
just
Bitcoin.
Like the music industry. People can't make money off music anymore the way that they used to. I mean, the whole economic system is changing, and people just don't know what to do.
It is changing, and nobody knows what the hell they're doing.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, one of my colleagues in Italy had said recently, you know, it's not going to be a recovery that we're going to go through economically. It's going to be a fundamental change in the way that the geoeconomic structure actually functions. We are not looking at a future that is going to be anything like where we have come from. It's going to be new frontier, folks. And are we going to enter that kind of a geopolitical and geoeconomic landscape with this ideology of distrust? And more importantly, I don't want to demonize people who are distrustful of authority. I just want to ask, why are they? And Tyler, you're a sociologist, dude. Come on. Why are people distrustful?
Because they don't have factory jobs anymore. They can't just grind away at the great machine like they used to. They're left to their own devices and being alienated from any kind of production or creativity or even providing a livelihood for that ever elusive family has put them in such a state that their any further agitation can result in more. Well, I shouldn't say, I shouldn't go there, but you know what I mean. It's just a,
what is the American dream? Do we still have an American dream anymore?
I think sometimes people just want to introduce a little anarchy.
Yeah. You want to know how I got these scars?
I'm telling you. What is the American dream anymore? Is
mac
there,
and cheese.
Is there mac and cheese? Is there an American dream? Actually, I think it's Boston baked beans, Tyler.
I'm sick of this, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Okay, well, let's just change subjects. But I do want to really quick address what Justin in our chat room just said. Justin had said, I don't trust Alex Jones. You know, there are actually people, and I got emails about this from members of our listenership over the last week. People saying, you know, there are some theories that Alex Jones himself is COINTELPRO. This is a term that actually goes back to old CIA operations, counterintelligence programs, okay? If you think about back in the 1960s, the Black Panthers leader, Fred Hampton, okay, Chicago-based. He was, what, 21 years old? He was young.
Yeah, he was...
Really young guy, okay? He was engaged in political speech. He always told his brothers to, he would address people at his speeches and things, and he would tell people, my brothers, please don't resort to violence in the way that you go about your public discourse, because if you do that, that's going to diminish. It's going to take away from the message. He would give lectures. He would sponsor, you know, pancake breakfasts and things. He would get up and he would go. He was up at 6 o'clock every morning, they said. Fred Hampton would speak at, you know, at churches, and he would, you know, speak at these breakfasts, and he would try and get young African-American men in the ghettos involved in political thought, but not doing so in a violent way. Okay, well, it's well known, and you can look this up. You can find this all over the web. You can read books about this, and you can research it just as I have done. The CIA operators working in collusion with the Chicago Police Department actually apparently not only followed Hampton, got information about him, but also conducted a raid on his apartment during which Hampton was shot and killed. His girlfriend at the time claims that she actually heard one of the officers, when they found Hampton lying there bleeding, had been shot in the head at close range. She had actually heard one of the officers say, is he dead? She hears a shot, boom, and says he probably is now. I'm paraphrasing exactly what was said, but the point is that there have been a lot of questions about whether or not there was an illegal attempt on his life, which resulted in his death with the raid of that apartment. The CIA working alongside the Chicago Police Department. You can look into this, and this is part of the history of what a lot of people have called counterintelligence programs that the CIA has been involved with. Now, Alex Jones is one who has also talked about what, you know, again, is shortened to be referred to as COINTELPRO. But I'll just tell people this. Look on YouTube. Do a YouTube search for Alex Jones along with the term COINTELPRO. See what comes up. Just you know, take a look. There's an interesting video of Alex Jones showing up at a Second Amendment rally in Austin, Texas. The group is meeting on the steps of the courthouse there in town. Alex,
I've seen that video.
Have you seen it? Yeah. Alex is walking down the street. He's got a megaphone, and he starts talking over them. And then when they go up to him and ask him after the fact, Alex, what were you doing? And he is absolutely, I'm talking the epitome of egotist, okay? And so I think a lot of people have asked, really, what is Alex Jones's agenda? Is this guy misinformation? Is this guy a puppet of the Illuminati? You know, I don't think that he really is. I think he's just honestly a guy who thinks he has the answers, and he lets his own ego get in the way. But it's a really sad state of affairs when the guy who is supposed to be the voice of reason, as he so calls it, is the very one who's out there, and people are asking questions about he and his operations and his intentions. There is a history of counterintelligence programs in the United States. Whether or not Alex Jones is a part of all that, I wouldn't begin to be able to tell you, okay?
Well, don't talk about Ted Kaczynski or any of those trials.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, there's any of these instances, if you dig deep enough, you'll find a bit of dirt. Actually, I have a Ted Kaczynski story, too. And really briefly, when I was, I visited Montana years and years ago, and I think the little town was maybe called Logan. It was a little, literally, you hear the old expression, one street town. I stopped in a gas station
And I walked in, and I was making conversation with the people that worked there, and I don't even know how we got on this conversation, but the woman told me next door is a girl in this little... There was like a little next to the gas station, there was a little convenience store, and they said, if you go talk to her, the girl who's running the cash register over there, she actually got love letters, okay, from the Unabomber. Yeah. And she said that...
Did she make wooden shoes?
No, she didn't, but she lived there in the little town, and she said that apparently the guy... This was the nearest town to where he had actually been apprehended. You remember he'd been living in a shack out in the woods? The story was that Kaczynski, I guess, had been living out there in a little shack... And he didn't actually have an affair, but he had fallen in love with this woman, and her claim was that he had sent her love letters, and that when he was apprehended, the FBI came and wanted to know about the letters that he had sent to her. I met this woman, and she told me the story. It was the most bizarre thing in the world, and she said, yeah, it was really creepy. He sent me these really weird, not really explicit, but gushing, I guess would be a term for them, love letters. So, yeah, that was my, I guess that's my Unabomber story. I can't even say it! Anyway,
cavorting with known combatants.
I don't think she was, if you'd known this woman. Anyway, I didn't know her. I only met her. When we come back, Stephen Greer's serious film. Seriously? That and more ahead on the Graylian Report. Stay tuned. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Tyler Pippen, the sociologist, and Caleb Hanks.
Nothing.
The engineer, the man who's engineering the madness from behind the scenes on the Graylian Report master console. Anyway.
Yeah, that makes me sound way more official.
You are. You know, Caleb actually has, now you don't see him in the daylight, but when he comes down into the bunker, he has an array of tentacles that actually protrude from beneath his armpits that assist him in pushing all the buttons that you have to push to be able to run this program.
It's like if I wasn't self-conscious about those enough.
No, really. Caleb actually is a Cthulhoid himself. Tyler, you're getting called out in the chat room there, brother.
Am I?
Well, not really so much, but what was the actual question, Caleb? I think our friend...
It was about Tyler's actual tentacle. they don't care 13. About mine. They care about Tyler.
Are you talking about Rasputin's tentacle here, Caleb?
Well, we were earlier.
That was disturbing.
Yes, Rasputin is a disturbing.
So, Micah, can we talk about that a little bit? Because I think that's a good talking point for us, that Rasputin got shot multiple times in the back, fell into a lake, was...
Do you like sea cucumbers?
He was attacked by rabid walruses. He lived through that. He had his skin removed. He put it back on, walked into his... Into his cubby.
Well, yeah, the history of the death of Rasputin, it was, oh, and, I'm
well,
sorry.
There are some extremely yes. great names yes. in the chat room tonight.
Yes, there are a lot of people in the chat room tonight, and we have a good one. That's probably Alex Jones right there. I'll just, I'll leave
Nemo.
I'll leave that alone. Anyway. Point is,
can you say that on the air?
Folks, if yes, you could, but I'm going to choose not to because you know what? What people are missing out on is this incredible social event that occurs every week during the live broadcast of this program, which is the chat room. If you want to get on that, you have to listen live Tuesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time here in the U.S. and, of course, around the world on the Internet. You can download the podcast at any time, but it's going to be a little more difficult for you to get in the live chat there. And join us at GraylianReport.com. We got a lot of folks in there, and they're just having a... There's got to be like, oh, gosh, look at all those people. I can't even count how many people we've got in there right now. But anyway, the point is I want to change gears here a little bit. Now, this new film, Sirius, has come out. I'm being serious. Now, listen to me. Seriously, the film is called Sirius. And apparently, I guess it premiered in Hollywood. Was it last night?
What, in someone's garage?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about that because here we had Stephen Greer. He asked people for money just like our friend Scotty Roberts speaking of calling people out,
another shill for the globalist, the reptilian himself.
Yeah, that's right. The mouthpiece of the reptilians, Scott Roberts.
Who better to write a story about reptilians than one of that ilk?
He's one of their ilk, I know. Gosh, I tell you, Scotty Roberts went on a radio program last night, and I said, break a tail, it'll just grow back, you know, as opposed to break a leg, get it anyway. But we do have an Indiegogo campaign going on for Scotty's Intrepid magazine, of which I... Yes, I'm a part of. And, of course, you can make your donations if you visit GreyLeanReport.com. As a matter of fact, people listening live right now on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see the Intrepid Magazine Indiegogo link, and you can donate there if you'd like to help get an alternative perspective on what's going on in the media out there, as opposed to what you hear on the mainstream and through the mouthpieces of the Illuminati that we've aforementioned on this program this evening. You can help us...
The more funds, the deeper we dig.
Well, you know, we don't exactly have deep pockets, what we're doing here, the three of us and guys like Scotty Roberts and others, you know, who we work with. So you can help that endeavor by clicking on that link and consider making a donation to Intrepid Magazine and the Indiegogo Fund for not only Intrepid, but also fantastic annual events like the Paradigm Symposium. We've got some new speakers announced, Dan Madsen. We've also got, who was it? We had our friend, Dr. John DeSalvo, we were just talking about before we went to air, who also hosts the program. John's a fantastic guy. He'll be speaking this year just as well. But anyway... Speaking of crowdfunding, Greer had gone out and he had said, you know, help us fund this endeavor. And I guess people had thought that they were going to get to see this film in you know, theaters all around the globe. Turns
Psych!
Out, yeah, exactly. Turns out apparently it's only going to be premiering in Hollywood, maybe in somebody's garage. I don't know. Look, I'll just say this. Last time I saw Stephen Greer talk, the guy, you remember the story? He gets up there, but we need your help. Will you help us? Will you help us? And he's up there doing like the donkey riding thing. I mean, it was the most weird.
It's like Bob Applewhite.
I mean, I don't know what this guy's trying to do. Stephen Greer, it was
help
part.
Us
it
buy was purple sheets it, and purple Nikes.
I'll put it to you like this: at Paradigm Symposium last October, George Norrie got up. He gave a 45-minute or so presentation and answered a bunch of questions, but he did a bunch of comedy in there. Now, when George Norrie gets up and he's talking comedy, you never question once what his intention is or what his message is.
Because you'll be disappointed.
Well, but the point is that he's up there, he's talking, he's telling jokes, you know, he's being very serious when he's talking about serious stuff. It's all one, you know, at times it's lighthearted, but it's all one continuous message. And then you see Stephen Greer when he gives a presentation, and there are these weird, odd jokes and things told. The first part of the presentation, it's just like he's trying to be serious, but augment it with this really bizarre, off-the-cuff humor, this kind of posturing and everything, and he's a big, bulky kind of a guy. He's talking about how he's briefed Obama. He's talking about how he's briefed every U.S. president since he apparently started the Disclosure Project and all this stuff, and then he's asking for money. He's always asking for money.
You're just gaining all kinds of fans tonight,
Michael. I know. I'm making all kinds of friends tonight.
Who is this lizard lover?
Well, yeah. The people in the chat room were talking about the pictures of Greer online, shirtless.
Is he suspected to be a reptoid?
He probably is a reptoid. If there were any better candidate for being a reptoid than Greer, I wouldn't know him. Maybe Scotty Roberts. But, well, anyway, so the premiere, I think, was last night of this serious film. And apparently it's a UFO-related film, but here's what's making all the big rounds, okay, is what I believe is called the Atacama Humanoid, this little person, this little thing that Greer says is a little alien. And people have been emailing the program nonstop about this. Micah, are you going to talk about Greer's little alien? Micah, what do you think about the alien? Mikey, what do you think?
Are we going to put it in the news every time somebody finds a dried-up frog in their couch cushions?
Or some old monster in my pocket toys?
Yes, you remember the little bag it comes in, the little guys that came in the bag and you drop them in a glass of water and it would dissolve.
Creepy crawler that
and one
like
time
that.
They looked at me and said,
I am wondering, why are you here?
Well, so people want to know what I think about Greer's little alien Muppet. Okay, here's what I'll tell you. First of all, the Huffington Post carried an article today. Apparently, what they are saying is that current tests have led us to believe that this is actually something human. Second of all, it was most likely a little alien baby human rather than being an alien.
Most likely
alien
an
baby
alien
human.
Infant.
It was an infant, but not an alien. And then finally, I want to point something else out, too. And this is the fundamental, you know, if you download this program on iTunes, you'll notice that we are listed under philosophy. we're not news and politics. I mean, because I don't think really, we try not to talk too much about politics. We certainly deal with news. This program deals with philosophy primarily because, again, we take news and we look at it through the filter of reason. I try to. Now, tell me this. Let's say Greer did have an anomaly, some sort of little creature. Let's say that tests performed on this creature determined without question that this thing was not human. Let's say that DNA testing said this little guy was something else.
Okay? No Mogwai.
He wasn't a
great responsibility.
He wasn't a Mogwai. He wasn't a gremlin. This little dude was, we don't know what he was, but he wasn't human. Okay, let's just assume. I'm not saying he was. I think tests right now are pretty conclusive. The Atacama humanoid is actually just the Atacama human. But I'll tell you this. If the thing was found someplace on Earth and found not to be human, what about that means that it is extraterrestrial? Tell me how that proves that alien life exists. Did we go to the moon and
they
find
found
the thing?
Asteroid fragments in its digestive tract.
Exactly. He had to swallow them to be able to, like a turkey. You know, the turkey swallows stones.
That sounds like what Alex Jones does.
He had moon dust in the crypts of his eyeballs.
Yeah, he eats sandpaper and he drinks whiskey.
Good morning, everybody. I'm just chowing down on my morning bowl of gravel.
So I sound in the morning. Good morning, Mike.
What are you talking about? How's it going? Hold on just a second.
Hi, guys.
David, why did I send my mother to Atlanta? Atlantis. What?
It is literally a prop from the Dark Crystal that was discarded years ago.
I would not be surprised.
Well, whatever this thing is, it's believed to be human. But the point is that, Alex Jones. I'm sorry, not Alex Jones. Now I'm getting my commentators mixed up here. Stephen Greer, again, claims in the film, apparently, that this thing is evidence of extraterrestrials. But how, if it was found on Earth, even if it wasn't human, how does that conclusively prove that we are dealing with something extraterrestrial?
It's a tripod.
There's no proof of anything extraterrestrial, is the point. Now, what it could be, and again, this were to assume that what was found, if in the event it were tested, DNA testing and whatnot, had determined that this thing wasn't human, what that would tell us is that there were humanoids, but non-humans that more than likely existed on Earth. It's not evidence of extraterrestrials, even in the event that we find something that's not human.
It's,
and that's the fundamental
goblin.
It would be more likely to be evidence of a goblin if it were found not to be human than evidence of an extraterrestrial. Did we find the thing on the moon? Did we find the thing on Mars? Did
we find dug it out of a cave?
It came from Earth. And even though that this thing is human, the fundamental flaw in logic that Greer was putting forth from the get-go was that by assuming we are dealing with something that appears to be something other than human, but humanoid nonetheless, it must be an alien. I'm sorry? Why?
The chat, it's funny.
Yes, yeah, they're having some fun tonight. So, well, there was a press release released, which is how press releases typically are released. And it said, inspired by the work of Dr. Stephen Greer, directed by Emmy Award-winning Amardeep Kalekia, and funded by the highest documentary, get this, what they're calling the highest documentary crowdfunding in history, Sirius introduces a DNA-sequenced humanoid of unknown classification to the world and sheds definitive light on the scientific reality of UFOs, ETs, extraterrestrials, for those of you who have been living in a cave with Atacama humanoids for the last 60 years, and advanced alternative energy technology. Sirius is narrated by actor Thomas Jane of the well-known and loved HBO series Hung.
The Punisher.
HBO series Hung?
That's the same
was
one.
Was hung out to dry.
Yes,
no
it was.
More.
Now, in more detail and with a similar smattering of mild, well, okay, let's jump ahead, actually. Okay. Teemingbrain.com carried this story. Here's the other excerpt, the relative excerpt from the actual press release. The film includes numerous government and military witnesses to UFO and ET secrecy. It also explains the connection to free energy and provides not only the vision of contact with ET civilizations, as regularly witnessed by Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind contact teams featured therein, presumably under the operation of Greer and his leadership, but also the paradigm-shifting physical evidence of a medically and scientifically analyzed DNA-sequenced humanoid creature of unknown classification found in the Atacama Desert in Chile. Additionally, eye-opening are the credentials and pedigree of the science and medical team behind this potentially profound and historical announcement.
Wait, does it say potentially eye-opening?
It says potentially. In other words, they don't know what the hell they have!
Yeah, two potentialies in one sentence means nada.
Exactly, that's right. Two negatives don't make a positive. They just made one big, fat little thing that they found in a cave in Chile that isn't an alien!
I'm gonna stick with frog. in the couch cushions.
There you go.
I'm going to stick with treasure troll.
It's a human is what it is, but even if it weren't human, how, again I ask, is that any kind of evidence of an extraterrestrial life form? Stephen Greer, I'm sorry. I remain unimpressed.
Well, apparently the tiny human humanoid baby thing is alive because it just signed into the chat room.
He's here?
He says...
Tiny baby humanoid.
I'm here, boys.
You know what's so hilarious is in the chat room we have Alex Jones Massive, I shouldn't say. We have Tiny Baby Humanoid. We have...
a very obscure Rasputin reference.
Yes, we have Reptile. You know, it's funny because it's almost as though people are tuning in just so that they can become a part of what we're talking about. They utilize the aliases that make them not only participants in the conversation, but literally a part of the mythology that is stemming from within.
And puts them so close to our hearts.
That's right. Well, you are close to our hearts. And I have to just put a real quick thank you out. You know, folks who've been not only contributing to the Intrepid crowdfunding, but also people who show their support in the so many different ways that they do to the Grayling Report, whether it just be sending a news tip along or the occasional donation or, you know, a mention on blogs or on Facebook or on Twitter about what we're doing. We appreciate that. And folks, we can't do it without you. We rely on the help of individuals like you to help us bring, again, I think, an open-minded but inherently skeptical and common sense approach to the study of unexplained phenomena, whether it be, you know, little alien humanoids found in the desert of Chile, or whether it be conspiracy, and I think, again, the growing trend toward conspiracy thought in America and other parts of the world.
Of ultrasonic weapon harassment.
Yes, exactly. Yes, the people who want to go live on the Wi-Fi farms. I'll tell you this, I haven't had that happen with Wi-Fi yet. But what I have had happen is the phenomenon of holding a cell phone next to your head and getting dizzy. I can't stand that. I always constantly use the speakerphone, which I guess only makes it more easy for people to listen in on my conversations.
Yeah, and you can't feed that tumor as quickly.
Apparently not. Yes, it makes it a little bit more difficult. But anyway, okay, we're up on a break. When we come back after this, we're going to be talking about some of the amazing predictions that Nikola Tesla made, as well as a couple of bad burglar stories. These are good burglar baggins. You're going to enjoy these. And finally, did Richard Dawkins yet again, put his foot in his mouth? I think so. We'll talk about all that when we return here in a moment on the Grayling Report. Stay tuned. For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
At risk of losing your home in a foreclosure? We can help. We'll deal with your bank, lower your principal. We'll buy you a pony, give you the ability to fly. We'll let you ride a unicorn. We'll give you a...
If you're facing foreclosure, who should you trust? The Hope Hotline is a free resource connecting you with HUD-approved housing counseling agencies available 24 hours a day who can give you the information and clarity you need. Call the Hope Hotline at 888-995-HOPE. That's 888-995-4673. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
This is the Grainian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grainian Report with your host, Mike Evans.
Welcome back to the program. Micah Hanks here. You're listening to the Grainian Report. You know, I'm just trying to make sense of the madness like everybody else. That seems to be what we do best on this program. I'm joined in studio by Caleb Hanks and the ever irreverent Tyler Pittman, the Dark Cardinal of Chaos.
The Yogs dig off.
Yes, indeed. We're just having a time tonight. This is probably the most fun I've had in the chat room. And, of course, you know, we're hitting the Twitter just as well, tweeting to the world. If you're missing out, well, if you're not listening to the program tonight, you're already missing out, so tough luck. But, of course, you can learn more about what we're doing if you follow our Twitter page. You can find us on Facebook just as well, and all the links to those things and various asunder information about our program you can find at www.grailianreport.com, in addition to daily updates and news from beyond the fringe. Now, something I wanted to talk about this hour. It's hilarious. I've never understood why the criminal mind would gravitate toward robbery, stealing.
Free peanuts.
Free peanuts, apparently. I mean, think about it. I mean, you know you're going to get caught, right? I mean, unless you're a really, really, really good criminal.
Yeah, like those dudes at Watergate.
Yeah, but they got caught, too.
G. Gordon Liddy here. I sweep secrets under the rug with my mustache.
G. Gordon Liddy, that's right, yes.
My gold.
So you were going to steal government
documents.
What is
the common denominator between G. Gordon Liddy, Glenn Beck, and Alex Jones?
1-800-GOLD-STARK. Now, slave.
Few would refute that, Tyler.
What's their source?
Oh, gosh. Tyler, I want you to do that most important job that anyone working with me on broadcast night in the bunker has to do, and that is, would you top off my coffee there? But
thank God I don't have to do that anymore.
I'm like a PA here.
Yeah, he's like, no, you don't really have to. It's okay.
I'm no longer the intern.
I am such a subordinate. I was taking my headphones off to
you were
indulge
literally,
Mr. Hanks.
You were actually going to get me more coffee. I went and got
more
coffee during the break.
Abduction wine?
Yes, you know, I do want to actually point out our friend Rob recently did send along a couple of bottles of abduction wine. If you haven't found out about abduction wine, I believe it's abductionwine.com, and they're all over the Twitterverse. They sent along some samples for us to enjoy. I called Rob to get him on the program and have not as yet heard from Rob about coming on the program. So
we did enjoy your wine, Rob, if you're listening.
Yeah, so, and the t-shirt.
And I know Rob's a listener. As a matter of fact, he emailed us just the other night after the program. So either way, thanks, Rob. And the offer still stands if you want to jump on here and talk a little bit about your product. And for those of you, the rest of you who might want to call into the program, you can join us by phone at area code 828-398-4886. Skype users could reach the program using Grailian Report. You can always just send us an email at info@grailianreport.com. Those come direct to the bunker. You can also text messages 828-367-7201. That number again, 828-367-7201. Everybody text messages these days, right? So
give us a call.
Why wait? Exactly. Well, that seems to be the preferred method of communication, especially among the younglings. So, that said, bad burglars. Did you hear this one about Marius Ionescu? He was 31 years old, and while burglarizing a home, okay, in Romania, where he lives, Romania. Yes, he lives in Romania, and he apparently was burglarizing a home when he heard a strange noise. He thought it was another thief breaking into the house, and so what does he do? He doesn't confront them. He doesn't run. No, he hides and grabs a telephone and calls the police and tells them about a burglary in process. Well, or in progress, rather. So the cops show
up. Unfortunate. Another burglar.
Yes, here I was burglarizing this home when another burglar showed up. So what do I do? I do the right thing and I notify the authorities. So
what are you doing here?
You ain't welcome here.
Two robbers in one house. What are the odds of that?
I've seen your face.
Yes, operator. There's a weird guy with a black mask on in here.
He's breaking into the house. Well, anyway, so Marius goes and he hides. And as the cops show up and begin searching the house, they only find one thief, Marius, and they arrested him.
He saw himself in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. So the noise he had heard was probably just the family cat, according to a police spokesperson. He already had a criminal record for similar break-ins, and given his nervous disposition, he probably should look for another job. He's likely to have a lot of time inside jail to think things over in the meantime.
Maybe DHS has a spot for him. If you see something, say something.
Well, you know, it's just, it's pretty amazing that this guy would... that he would call the police while he's trying to burglarize a home.
There's emergency! There's emergency!
Hey, there's a reason why we have Darwin Awards and things of the sort.
Yes, indeed. Well, we should probably offer a Dawkins Award after tonight, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment.
As in the band?
No, about in relation to Richard Dawkins, and this the guy just keeps putting his foot in his mouth. But I digress. I'll come to that here in a moment. I want to talk about this. There's another burglary story. That one was good, but it gets better. When was the last time that you heard a burglary suspect tell authorities that, well, it was an inside job? Wait a minute. This is another
Watergate?
Popular term. Yeah, right. No, I'm not talking about G. Gordon Liddy.
About Liddy.
No, this is a this is another guy. This is just, this story is almost too bizarre for words, but I'm going to try and articulate it nonetheless. Okay, surveillance video had already tied directly the 21-year-old. His name was Herson Torres. To two attempted bank robberies in the area. Okay, Bloomberg had carried this story earlier this week. Now get this. The story had been, he didn't even have a criminal record, but he wasn't talking about what happened. He had been taken into custody by authorities. They were questioning him about why he had apparently robbed two banks. And they even told him that he could be sent, as I understand, I believe, he could be sent to prison for 25 years on each count of bank robbery.
They questioned him for why he robbed a bank. For money.
Well, actually,
because it's his baby face Nelson.
Yeah, this guy thought he was going to get money, but now he
didn't. Bitcoin?
He didn't think he was going to get money from robbing the bank. No. Get this. This is interesting. He said to authorities who had him in custody, apparently, okay, Herson Torres said, if I tell you, you're not going to believe me. Now, apparently, at this point, he was crying, and he began to tell about this incredible story. He believed that he had actually been recruited by the Defense Intelligence Agency to participate in a secret operation testing the security of Washington area banks. He told the authorities who had taken him into custody that he'd actually been assigned to rob. He'd been assigned to rob half a dozen banks over a period of 4 days. And he told them about a man who had only identified himself as Theo. And this is the man who had hired him and given him the orders, and had said that if he, and get this, he had persuaded the young man, 21 years of age, without a criminal record of previous offenses, he had persuaded him to look into the serious robbery of banks over a 4-day period. And he'd done so by sending him text messages and email messages. And he'd also given him, no, this is hilarious.
And there's some guy sitting back on his phone just cackling while this guy does this.
Yeah, right. Well, that...
Well,
yeah.
Hold on here. Did he rob these banks with any weapon?
Apparently, as I understand it, there was not a weapon used because this was part of the stipulation that his quote-unquote superiors had passed along to him.
This is interesting because the DIA, which is an agency not many people are aware actually exists, have a history of doing... I wouldn't say it's similar to the FBI and their plots that are foiled, you know, that they're involved in the whole time. But I'm actually familiar with someone that I trust closely that was in a similar circumstance for the government where they were, their job was to go around and see if they could infiltrate certain areas.
You've told us that story before. Now, and you're right, I think that does happen, but this is
sequester,
fairly...
Sequester, maybe. You know, you can't really afford to pay off your patsy, so you just jail him.
Now, this is fairly unprecedented, because this guy claimed that a member of intelligence agencies had contacted him directly and had actually said, you know, we will pay you. I believe he was actually offered a sum for robbing six banks over a 4-day period in the Washington area. So, Mr. Torres, who was in custody for the actual robberies... offered text messages, emails, and also the password to his Facebook account to the authorities to show that he had indeed received information that he believed had come from the Defense Intelligence Agency.
So CISPA's behind this if they're handing over Facebook passwords.
Well, no,
wasn't me.
He voluntarily gave them this information so to prove that he had gotten information that he believed came from the Defense Intelligence Agency and from this man who had identified himself only as Theo. Okay, well, the police looked up Torres, or they booked him on charges of attempted robbery. apparently they didn't necessarily think about it too much, but once they actually went into his email account and his Facebook account and saw the messages, they even saw a form that had been sent to Torres, they began to wonder if there wasn't actually some legitimacy to the claim, okay? That's what initially drew my attention to this story. I couldn't believe it, but I thought, could it be that actually an intelligence agency could have actually tapped this man and told him to go out and rob banks? This is insane.
Yes, it is.
Well, get this. So it gets even stranger. Okay, he had returned home, apparently, Torres, from unloading trucks at a Target where he worked, and his phone had lit up with a text message from a friend of his, a woman who had said, I've got a job for you, and you're going to get paid $25,000 for doing it. Her name was Carolina Villegas. He said, what do I do? And she says, all you got to do is rob banks. Well, apparently, Villegas, his friend, had met, okay, never met him in person, I don't think, but had come into contact with this Theo character through an online dating site.
Hey, Theo, what are you doing with your buddies?
Theo!
Well, apparently, Carolina had met this guy on an online dating site. Well, Theo had used an internet program to conceal his number. And
this, what, housing number?
The number that he'd used for the text message exchanges with Torres. He passed information along to Torres, led him to believe that he was a member of intelligence agencies, okay, and passed along this information and told the guy to rob these banks. Now, get this. This is incredible. Investigators quickly traced the number after it was finally released to a 26-year-old man named Joshua Brady. He was living in Mattoaka, Virginia.
I thought you were going to say...
Mattoaka?
Where's that place? Nigeria.
Matter of fact. He's actually living in the Atacama Desert of Chile with a little humanoid. It's no longer alive. Well, anyway, he was living in a quiet town in Virginia, 2,500 people living there or whatever. Anyway, this 26-year-old guy, Joshua Brady, they found him sleeping in his home on August 17th. Federal agents apparently raided the dingy ranch-style home. He lived there along with his grandmother, his 10-year-old brother, and his mother.
Folks, are you aware that you live in a dingy household?
Yes, this descriptive term. Anyway. Prosecutors charged Brady with impersonating a government official. Now, get this. It wasn't actually an intelligence agency that had contacted Torres. It was a 26-year-old guy...
Named D-I-A, Dia.
No, his name was, what was his name here? Brady, Joshua Brady. He lived with his mom, his grandmother, and his little brother. And apparently, they told him that he, for what he had done impersonating an intelligence officer, he could have gone to prison himself for 20 years. Now, get this. They interviewed him in October of last year. They said Brady appeared calm, insisting that he was, in fact, an intelligence agent. Now, get this. He claimed he had been penalized for trying to blow the whistle on the CIA for letting Torres take the fall. This was not the kind of operation I wanted to work on, he said from behind a glass partition in the Northern Neck Regional Jail in Warsaw, Virginia.
Comfortable behind that glass partition.
It turns out Brady was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. He claims he joined the CIA before turning 20 and provided technical services and training of civilians. I can't go into detail on initial contact or about my background, he told the people questioning him. Now, the purpose of Operation Downstrike, as he called it, was to train Torres for clandestine work. He said, when they pull the alarm, then you have a short time to get out of there. He said, you need to be able to escape, and that's what's going to be stressful. If you crack under stress, then, you know, you're going to be useless to the agency. That's what he told this guy, the 21-year-old guy who actually went out and started robbing banks, believing that he had been in touch with an intelligence agency that was going to pay him $25,000 to rob banks. Now, the rules of the operation dictated that no weapons could be used. Stolen money was to be returned to the government, obviously to Theo. Brady refused to identify anyone else involved in the operation, saying disclosure was barred by the Intelligence Identities Protection Act. Okay, documents on his encrypted hard drive seized by government could prove all of this, he insisted, and other operations would follow, but this, he told Torres, is real.
Nope. We should keep a eyeball on this.
I wonder if this guy's aware that the word gullible isn't in the dictionary.
Well, now I'm seeing two different approaches. You know, Caleb, you seem to think it's not real, and Tyler, I think you're still...
No, I'm just saying...
Why would you say I think it's real? Because Caleb says it ain't.
I'm not saying that I don't think it's real, I'm just saying that... If it did happen, this person is obviously very, very gullible.
Well, okay, now, we're getting to that, okay? Because I'll tell you, there's a resolution. So you all, listen, suspend your disbelief and your judgment, for that matter. until the facts lie on the table before you clearly, and you can observe.
And what's the source?
This was Bloomberg that actually carried this.
Bloomberg.
Yes. Okay, now listen.
Such a high-profile publication for such a lame story.
Hey, shape up, Tyler Pittman.
Yes,
now listen.
Sir.
Shape up, shapeshifter.
In the past, Brady had posed a computer security consultant, okay, or that he had posed as a computer security consultant. He had posed as a hacker. He had also claimed to be a University of Virginia law student.
And he's not none of these?
He apparently is none of these things, but listen, I'm getting to that.
Whitewashed.
I'm getting to that. Now, hold on. Listen, court filings in Virginia sketch a repeat offender, this guy, 26 years old, but he's a repeat offender whose father was in and out of prison. Since 2005, Brady has been accused of posing as an entrepreneur seeking multi-million dollar deals for computer hardware. He's stolen around $1,100 from one woman who...
Ooh, $1,100.
Whom he promised an Xbox 360 to in return. I know.
It's like four of them.
He promised
her. Tyrant?
Yes, he promised to give her an Xbox 360. That's pretty telling. He'd also been accused of writing some bad checks. Now,
and poetry.
In the last 7 years, he was charged in three criminal cases. He was found guilty in one, pled no contest to another, and pled guilty in the third. He was released in 2012 after a year in prison for violating the terms of his sentence in what became known as the Xbox case.
Read that paragraph one more time.
Do I have to read the whole thing?
No,
I don't like reading,
the
Tyler.
Charges, the cases and the charges.
He had been found guilty in one case. Okay, he had pled no contest to another and then pled guilty in the third. And apparently he had been trying to...
So he pled guilty
posed,
to two cases.
He had posed as an entrepreneur. He had also apparently stolen $1,100 from a woman, and he had claimed to, you know, be awarding her with an Xbox 360 for whatever this was. And then he had also written some bad checks. Okay, so check fraud. Now, Dan Christman...
For $1,100 for the Xbox 360.
Yes, of course. She could have gone out and bought, you know, her own Xbox with that. But anyway, now Dan Christman, who works at a general store about a mile from Brady's home, said they used to spend a lot of time with Brady playing EverQuest, an online game involving wizards, warriors, and dragons. About 8 years ago, Brady was caught by game administrators stealing virtual money. Bitcoins! No, I don't know.
Give me your life. This is half-life currency.
This is what Christman said. Josh is a really smart guy. He has a lot of energy in that department, but nowhere to funnel it. Now, here's the crux of the issue. Here's what was apparently really going on. On January 29th, Brady reached a plea deal with federal prosecutors. Under the agreement, he pled guilty to one count of using a forged federal judge's signature with the documents that he had sent to Torres to make it appear that he actually was working with intelligence agencies.
The government charge? That's notable.
The government agreed in exchange to drop the bank robbery and impersonation charges. But get this, his lawyers argued that he suffered from mental illnesses that made him unable to form intent to commit the crimes he was charged with. Brady has, apparently, PTSD. This is the mastermind, the 26-year-old mastermind behind this entire thing. He suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, paranoid schizophrenia, schizotypal personality disorder, and according to the doctor hired by his lawyers, he also has apparently failed mental examinations that would have proven that he had not acted under the influence of a delusional disorder that could have posed problems for him during the bank robbery trial. As I understand it, he could have faced up to 5 years in prison, but apparently the government is recommending that he instead be sentenced to 3 years of supervision in his mother's home.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
3 years of supervision under Mama's watch.
Don't worry,
we've
got that slave under control with some tranquilizers and Kool-Aid.
Yeah, he's also apparently agreed to seek mental health treatment.
Talk about a slap on the wrist.
You know, this guy literally,
robbing.
He impersonated intelligence officers. He talked a 21-year-old kid into robbing two banks with the intention of robbing six under the auspices, of course, of being, you know, employed by a government agency and with the promise of being paid $25,000 for doing so. And this guy basically has been sentenced to 3 years of intense and close and personal watch by his mother at his home.
He failed.
Isn't that-
at the dingy ranch-style home.
This place is... Do you guys see the dinge in here? Write that down in the notes.
It's so dingy.
Didn't the people that, like, that just walked into the White House and started, like, photobombing, didn't they get, like, a more serious treatment than that?
They probably did.
They dingy.
You know, but the thing is, it's just incredible that, again, a guy with all the, apparently, aforementioned, you know, mental issues that this guy was suffering from. It never actually states why at age 26 he was suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. I don't think they mention...
Because of the events that had unfolded. The things to keep in mind here are he was
told he would be paid $25,000 for successfully completing
the 26-year-old. The 26-year-old is the one suffering from PTSD, not the man who had been misled into thinking he was working for an intelligence agency.
Yeah, he got PTSD. So
and there were apparently more than one individual. Okay,
if you brainwash slaves and you say you're crazy, then slap on the wrist.
You know, folks, if you think that you're not enslaved by a tyrannical government, you're wrong.
Okay, well, but this guy actually thought that he was being employed by a government that seemed to think it was okay to launch phony baloney robberies of banks in the Washington area. It's hard. The mind reels.
I'm so tired of the news.
Smarten up, slaves.
The mind absolutely reels. Okay, when we come back, our mind's going to reel at something a little different, and it's a real statement made by Richard Dawkins. Should journalists believe in God? We'll talk about that when we come back here on the Grayling Report. Stay tuned. For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Report. I'm Micah Hanks, and you've locked into your voice of reason in an unreasonable world, broadcasting from the dark heart of the Mohorovic discontinuity, our shadowy little corner of the web, the worldwide web, known as the Grayling Report. If you're not following us online, check us out online, www.graylingreport.com. We're on Twitter and Facebook just as well. While you're at the website, do consider taking a look at the Intrepid Magazine crowdfunding effort that we have underway at present. It's really important. We've got some fine folks up there, Scotty Roberts, Rainey Roberts, all our friends there at Intrepid who are helping us disseminate a reasonable alternative approach to study of what's going on in the world around us and, of course, in the media each day. Caleb played the boogeyman sound effect there, and I'll tell you what, I think that especially in the esoteric community, there is probably no name of a boogeyman that has been put forth that causes people to shudder more than that of Richard Dawkins. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Actually, Chris Hayes would be the guy who would know more about this, but this guy's been listed alongside the late Christopher Hitchens and a few others as one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, if you will, you know, in terms of guys.
Which horse is he? The green one?
I don't know, Tyler.
Neon
pink. I don't know, okay. You should ask our latest addition to the chat room, Tesla's, well, never mind. Anyway,
Tesla's pigeon.
Tesla's pigeon. If you don't know the story of Tesla's pigeon, we do have a Tesla story we're going to get to here in just a moment, you know. Call it what you want. Call it rock and roll. But Richard Dawkins, let me put something out. Before I get to this Dawkins story, to kind of initiate things here, I want to, and I'm going to put this out to the people here in the studio just as well. Tyler doesn't even have a snare drum. He's actually hitting like a ceremonial gong over there.
Tyler, this is no time for meditation.
I thought it was the initiation.
The question I have for the folks in the chat room, folks listening who are downloading the podcast, the two of you here in the studio, and of course anyone who may be digesting this auditory condiment, if you will, tell me something. Do you believe in fairies? Last week on the program, we had Rosemary Ellen Guiley as our guest, and she opened the conversation very frankly, talking not only about the djinn, which was the subject of her recent book, The Djinn Connection, but she also talked about their relationship with devils, demons, fairies, and all these kinds of things. And she, in a very...
Shadow people,
of
reptilians.
Course.
Reptilians.
Reptoids, Tyler.
Well, there are two classifications.
Oh, there's a difference
reptoids
between
the two. Reptoids are...
Why are we splitting scales?
Dwellers.
We're splitting scales here,
reptilians.
Guys.
Reptilians.
Look, I don't think there's much of a difference between the two of them. Who let that guy in here? Would you please take him back outside? The point is that I think that a lot of, well, actually, I had anticipated a lot of people would hear Rosemary on the program and go, what is this woman talking about? Now, I respect Rosemary Ellen Guiley quite a bit. I think she's a very well-researched individual. I think she's a person who is, as a practitioner of Wicca and also as a person who has studied, you know, nature religions, you know, the history of witchcraft, the history of magic. She's co-authored books, you know, and worked with a lot of different people in the field. Including Philip Imbrogno, who there was a big scandal about him a couple of years ago. I think that Rosemary is a person who has come to her own interpretation of reality. And yes, in a very matter-of-fact fashion, she talks about what she talks about in a way that is very all-inclusive and treats these sorts of you know, aspects of her perceived reality and that of many others as being very factual. I couldn't tell you if fairies do or do not exist. If nature spirits actually exist, if the people who were there at Findhorn were invoking actual elementals and you know, which was allowing them to grow lettuce in the sandy soil there on the beaches.
The miracles of Findhorn.
Yeah, you know, remember that?
That was interesting. They grow like giant pumpkins and stuff, right?
They would, yeah, and they claimed that the way that they did it, you know, really to me, as opposed to invoking elemental spirits, that sounded a lot more like Cleve Baxter's research with talking to a plant and a plant actually growing better and...
You know, I could be wrong, but I think I looked up Findhorn recently, and it's like this super green operation. They do everything via solar and wind technology and all sorts of stuff.
Well, you know, yeah, and there's a lot of parallels, I think, between the, you know, between the nature, not naturists, okay, but the nature, you know, the nature, what would you call them? Nature,
fairies?
nature esotericist community, whatever.
We'll go
pagans?
With that.
Wicca, yeah, pagan communities and whatnot. And also, I think the research of guys like Cleve Baxter, who claimed that plants actually exhibit some form of consciousness that's very different from, you know, what human consciousness or any other kind of a creature with a central nervous system would exhibit, but nonetheless, that they seem to be conscious and aware.
Here's the one that hooked plants up to EEG machines, right?
Right, yeah. He'd used light detection equipment to be able to determine. He had initially...
Are you lying?
He had hoped, he wasn't trying to find out if plants were lying, but what he'd hoped to do is he'd hoped to measure basically, I think, the difference you know, in what was it that he was trying to do? He was putting water into the plants, and he was trying to see if there was an electrical a differential that could be measurable from the leaves of the plants as water was brought into the plant and then received by the leaves as photosynthesis was occurring. I think that's what, in essence, Cleve Baxter was trying to do.
I don't think they were ever able to say conclusively if there was anything really to it, though.
What he claimed, yes, many have called it pseudoscience, but what he claimed was going on is that he would go over, and I think he had gone in one of the experiments, and he was going to trim one of the leaves, and as he had gone over to try and trim the leaf, he had noticed that the machine acted like it was quote-unquote screaming. okay, in response to his action, and that he found that even if he didn't intend, even if he wasn't actually going to hurt the plant, but he went toward the plant with a pair of scissors as though he intended to do it, the plant would scream, as though the plant had, and he said there was no audible sound, obviously, but this was registered with his equipment.
Time to prune you back.
Yeah. And so these little plants would scream.
No, but in, even in like in my chemistry textbook when I was studying, they had the same similar study where you play a certain type of music and deionized water would have a certain crystallization pattern compared to you play the mamas and the papas, and it's looking like some kind of crazy tetrahedral shape, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, and I don't remember.
So it has something to do with like wave pollution, you know, like wavelengths.
Have you seen when they've hooked up water to like a stream of water to a sine wave, and the water will actually drip out in the shape of the sine wave?
Okay, well, listen, guys, anyway, I want to get back to Dawkins here, because the reason I ask about fairies and nature spirits and all this in relation to all this is a question, first and foremost, is Dawkins on his website. Here's what essentially happened. There had been some tweets made, and Dawkins had actually written something along the lines, you know, in essence, that that a journalist shouldn't maybe have a fundamentalist religious belief if they're going to be a journalist and be fair and balanced, right? Well, of course, there was public outcry about this, and so on his website, Dawkins posted the following. This is how he opens his rebuttal. He says, "Sir Arthur Conan Doyle believed in fairies. In an age of pre-Photoshop innocence, Doyle was fooled by a pair of mischievous schoolgirls who fabricated cardboard cutouts and photographed them." Of course, he was talking about that. Was it the Cottingley fairies or whatever it was?
Yeah.
He said, "Now, how should we react to such gullibility? As a minimum, we might simply call attention to the paradox that the creator of the unfoolable Sherlock Holmes and the belligerently skeptical scientist Professor Challenger could be so credulous. It's a rum do, or some such cliche might occur to us, and we might take a mental note to increase our own skepticism of other causes that he might espouse. For example, his unshakable belief, even Houdini himself couldn't shake it, that Harry Houdini had supernatural powers." Doyle was well known to believe this himself, and he was, of course, a practicing spiritualist. Now, we would not, I think, stop reading Doyle's excellent fiction simply because he was, in one respect, a credulous fool. Now, Dawkins goes on after saying this to say, "Yesterday on Twitter, I wrote of the British journalist Mehdi Hazlan's belief that the Prophet Muhammad flew to heaven on a winged horse. It is a belief at least as silly as Doyle's belief in fairies, hence the connection.
Pegasus.
And it merits the same. It's a rum-do comment." I'm unfamiliar. Anyone, by the way, familiar with that expression, "it's a rum-do"? I'm not.
It's like a mixed drink where you take some...
thank you, Tyler.
Captain Morgan's and Mountain Dew.
I'm applauding you in my mind, Tyler.
Well,
throw a Molotov.
I'm unfamiliar with that expression, but anyway. Someone in the chat room just asked, is it really known how firmly Conan Doyle believed in fairies? He was well known. As a matter of fact, he authored a couple of books, one I believe was called Into the Unknown, where he discussed some of his belief in spiritualism and the unexplained, which is funny because that is in extremely sharp contrast to the fictional portrayal of Sherlock Holmes, who was an unapologetic skeptic. Okay,
didn't he have an unpublished memoir or something titled Fairies, Friends of Conan?
I may have, I'm not sure. but the point is that Arthur Conan Doyle was pretty outspoken as an individual in his belief in unexplained phenomenon, whereas, again, strangely, a character like Sherlock Holmes was so starkly different, you know, from, you know, if you think about like Ian Fleming and his portrayal of James Bond, a lot of people have said that a lot of Fleming's personal, you know, favorites and tastes and things in terms of cocktails and card games and things like that were kind of carried along into the fictional portrayal of this dashing secret agent, James Bond 007. Well, you know, Doyle wasn't quite like that. And Doyle, although many had actually said that Sherlock Holmes was very much a characterization of Arthur Conan Doyle, you know, Doyle was at times, as Dawkins pointed out, I do think it would be safe to say pretty credulous. And yet, you know, Sherlock Holmes is famous, probably the most famous literary character that he created, arguably. Sherlock Holmes was an absolute staunch realist, an absolute staunch skeptic. It's very interesting. So Dawkins was making that comparison with regard to Mehdi Hazan, I believe was the, or Mehdi Hazan was the journalist who had apparently claimed his belief in Prophet Muhammad and that he had flown to heaven on a winged horse. Now, Dawkins wrote that such an effective critical intellect should be simultaneously capable of believing in winged horses, okay, seemed to me to merit some sort of wry comment. Comment of the it's a rum-do variety. Isn't it odd what a paradox like Conan Doyle or Dowding, of course in reference to Lord Dowding, who had led the Royal Air Force Fighter Command in the Battle of Britain, who had also apparently believed in fairies just as well. How such men of modernity and of resolute science and of course modern conception of such things, how these men could believe in fairies, it's incredible. So Dawkins goes on to say, unfortunately, I phrased it poorly when I wrote this. He said, instead of saying, isn't it quaint that such a successful journalist can simultaneously believe something so daft, I wrote, Mehdi Hassan admits to believing Muhammad flew to heaven on a winged horse, and New Statesman sees fit to print him as a serious journalist. Now, Dawkins points out, I could not deny that this sounds horribly like a call for New Statesman to sack him, and it is not surprising that it was taken in that way and became controversial as a freedom of speech issue. But even worse, some respondents went overboard and thought I was saying that no Muslim should ever be employed as a journalist.
Dawkins is afraid of the Islamic hit squads.
Well, you know, there has been a history of that kind of thing happening. Remember the cartoon artist?
That's exactly why I'm bringing it up.
And so I don't know if Dawkins is afraid of the political and religious repercussions of making the statement that he made, but he said, I certainly never intended any of those meanings. Twitter's 140 character limit is notoriously inimical of to nuance. And if I were to attempt a nuanced account of what I really intended to say, it would be rather confusing. It would be a mixture of the following three. And
as
he goes
if
on.
It wasn't.
Go ahead.
As if it wasn't confusing.
Well, you know, again, the thing is I was talking with my father on the telephone recently about this. And also it mirrors something that a colleague of mine who's been on the program a couple of times before, Dr. Maxim Kammerer, has said. You get to a point, if you really study mysticism, where you see beyond the atheist versus believer or the skeptic versus believer argument. This is why Scotty Roberts and I have talked many times about writing a book and calling it At Odds, that looks at what I would call a Hegelian kind of dialectic, you know, this argument, the two warring factions, the believers versus the skeptics, okay, fighting against one another when really at the heart of the matter there seems to be something different. Tell me how science disproves, and of course the skeptics think that you're absurd if you say this, but does science... We can't prove with science that there is a God, but does science disprove that there are forces? Let's not say God, but let's say forces beyond those which we know to exist naturally in the universe that could be accountable for the creation of what we call the universe. Science cannot disprove that there are forces at play, but of course, the skeptics would say it's absurd to say that because the burden of proof is not on those things which cannot be proven, but it is on those who make absurd claims and claim that by virtue of the fact that it can't be disproven that there's merit to their study. I think that what we have to take into consideration is that, in all honesty, you can't make an absurd claim and then say that because science can't disprove it, that there's merit to it. You also, by the same token, can't claim that your scientific skepticism allows you to know all the facets of the universe so well that you can with certainty say that there is no divine creator, or that there is no, if not a divine creator, some intelligent force behind the creation of the universe. We simply don't know. Think about, you know, something that Caleb and I talk about quite often on the program, the idea that in the future, what we might call operators, okay, future descendants could be utilizing something akin to a matrix-like computerized or digitized substructure, a program, if you will, to monitor or to even control aspects of the known universe. What if aspects of what you or I, you listener, person who's listening to this program right now, aspects of what we perceive as being reality could be the byproduct of an advanced simulation emanating from our temporal future? This sounds absurd, okay? But again, there are people, and I brought this to the table in my lecture that I gave at the International UFO Congress this year. I think that when philosophers and scientists are seriously discussing the potentials for such things as what I've outlined here, computer simulations that in a matrix-like fashion, simulations that literally could dictate aspects of our known universe emanating from what we might call a post-singularity, technological future, our temporal future, These things taken into consideration really begin to change fundamentally what we perceive as being our universe, the creation of this universe, what scientists call the Big Bang, and what, this is the great question, might precede that. And so my father and I were talking about this on the telephone recently. Dr. Maxim Kammerer and I have had this discussion. You get to a point where when you think about not only pairing science with mysticism and all things that can be taken into consideration and philosophically can be ruminated over and pored over and thought about, you get to a point where it's not a matter of whether or not this or that believes. You don't have to take a black or a white, yes, it does or no, it does not stance. You can, and it's okay to divorce yourself from all that and say, okay, I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic, though, because I think that the majority of the people in the scientific community, they don't, we're not able to communicate with some sort of sentient consciousness that isn't embodied in some sort of biological body, but
right.
And it might seem weird to look for something, for a consciousness that is not in a body. But then again, we look for these intangible, as they are now, things like the God particle. Or,
yeah.
And, but we can look for these quote-unquote invisible things, but it's just like, what imaginary friend is more theoretically feasible for us to actually find scientifically? I think that there's possibilities for any of that to exist, but as we are seeing with technology, we're getting closer and closer to finding those things. But to mark anything off the list and just say, no, that's impossible, I think is the most ridiculous thing ever, because as we've seen through technology, pretty much everything is becoming possible.
There are so many possibilities that are existing around us right now. We have to take all these things into consideration. That's what's so important. And I think that, again, you get to a point where, in a sublime kind of way, you can step back and say, okay, I'm willing to challenge myself on the concept of what we might call the Judeo-Christian God, or the Muslim God, or the Shinto God, if there is such a thing, you know, being primarily, I guess, an ancestral kind of worship. That
or
they,
the elder gods.
The elder gods of Lovecraftian mythos, you know, the Thulu mythos.
What you're talking about sounds a lot like predictive programming.
Predictive programming. For our listeners, Tyler, would you please define that?
It's programming that's predictive.
There you go.
Are you getting into this? What are the human built-in software?
Well, no, I'm actually thinking about the types of simulations we know exist. Like, if you think about the city of Las Vegas, Nevada, the whole thing is basically a simulation of different landmarks or experiences that have been existent in throughout time. You have what is the pyramid place called?
A pyramid?
I don't know. What is the Bellagio? I know that's one.
It's called a Bellagio.
So these, and then they have like the Eiffel Tower replicated there. The whole city of Las Vegas depends on an unnatural amount of energy being pumped into it just so it can survive one day of financial activity. It's not really sustainable if you look at how much money that costs in a recession. But what I'm getting at is that is a city that people go to escape. What's the little motto of it? What happens in Las Vegas?
What stays in Las Vegas. It is. It's an escape. Well, it's almost kind of like a virtual reality.
Exactly. It's a simulation.
To look at it on
a spectacle.
Interesting. Okay.
To look at it from another angle, this whole idea of what is virtual. Ray Kurzweil uses the example multiple times that if we have a conversation on a phone, technically that conversation happens in a virtual substrate. But just because what we agree on, or if we say we're going to go get lunch tomorrow, if we agree on that in this virtual platform, it does it not exist? And I've talked a lot with my friends about this as well. Thinking about Second Life and virtual reality, I think in the oncoming years, our perception of what reality actually is going to change quite immensely. Because let's just say that you go into some sort of virtual social medium like Second Life, if you're cool, and like, you know, and you go on Second Life like me.
Caleb, let me ask you real quick. Do you go on? You do. You just answered the question. Never mind.
I end up on Second Life sometimes very late at night when I'm lonely.
I have tried it before. I don't have a whole lot of time to do stuff like that.
It's fun.
I want to make this point real quick.
Is that let's just say that you're in Second Life and you have some sort of object that somebody has given you. You can leave an object somewhere in
Bitcoin.
Second Life. And somebody else can come along and find that object. You know, it's that there is a certain reality to this virtual reality.
I would agree,
And I think that when when people start to, you know, I mean, we've already seen the lady that had the hole drilled in her head and she can control the robotic arm. You know, people can use technology with their implementation of their biology. I mean, it works. We've seen that it works. It is only going to continue to get smaller, more efficient, probably more cost effective. If you see how iPhones now are $200 with an upgrade to where something comparable technologically back in the day would have been thousands and thousands of dollars.
I can get them for less than that. And think about all the... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Tyler.
Oh, I was just going to say real quick, I totally agree. And I think that's where the value of simulation inherently is. You can cause experiences or charge money for experiences that are increasingly controlled in their margins. So let's go to a break. I hear our sponsors coming, let's hold on to this idea.
They're begging you.
They're begging for the Dawkins discussion.
They really are. I figured this would be a hot topic. I wanted to get to this Tesla thing, too, here before we go out. And of course, there's a little bit of news that's been broken today about this Twitter hoax rocking Wall Street. Okay. I just have to say, apparently a Twitter account...
real?
Well, we'll come back after the break and talk about this really briefly, because this is actually big-time news. It just, again, shows the interactivity, the elements of synthetic technology around us that are literally granting people access to such things as crashing, maybe, the Wall Street stock market. Okay, we'll talk about that here in just a minute when we come back. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. Stay tuned.
The Outback. Andrew Nicholson's latest, Weird Australia. Real reports, uncanny creatures, strange sightings, extraordinary encounters. Weird Australia, the latest from researcher Andrew Nicholson. For more information, visit WeirdAustralia.com.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
I'm Micah Hanks, and this is the final segment of this week's edition of the Graylian Report. Almost makes me wish this was a program that will broadcast more than once a week. Maybe one day with the proper funding and the proper utilities behind the endeavor, that will become a reality. But in the meantime, I want to talk about something really quick. This is a story that's trending right now in the news. And we'll wrap up our Dawkins discussion and then round things out with a few predictions for the future given by the ever-esoteric and, of course, very wise Nikola Tesla. But this is what's going on. USA Today is reporting that a Twitter hoax rocked Wall Street earlier today and also revealed a lot of vulnerabilities inherent to the market. A hacked Twitter account of a major news organization on Tuesday dispelled any lingering notion that tweets are mere 140-character missives, as Dawkins had said, that harmlessly fly off into the ether. I think that the general trend here that we're seeing is that, well, frankly, whatever you say on Twitter can have a long-lasting and meaningful effect. Now, listen, folks.
Cyber attack.
Today,
more security.
This was not even a cyber attack, but I think it had a very similar effect. Listen, today at 1:07 p.m. Eastern Time, a tweet from the Associated Press exclaimed, quote, breaking, two explosions in the White House and Barack Obama is injured. Can you believe this?
No.
Well, apparently you shouldn't because it was a hoax. But within seconds, Wall Street was in panic mode. Now get this, sending the Dow Jones Industrial Average into free fall and erasing, listen to this, erasing nearly $200 billion off of the broader market's value as a result of a tweet by the hacked Associated Press Twitter account. Now think about this. We have a major mainstream media operation with a social networking account that was hacked by individuals who put up a phony message that took down Wall Street. The Associated Press quickly revealed its Twitter account had been hacked and said that the tweet was fake. The White House issued assurances that the president was in fact safe. Jay Carney, actually, of course, spokesman for the White House, came out and said the president is fine. I was just with him. Traders breathed a sigh of relief, and within minutes, the Dow had erased the hoax-fueled losses and closed up 152 points to 14,719.
Sounds like an exercise to me.
Well, you know, this just stinks of a false flag operation.
It's too convenient. Honestly, like, this whole hacking thing, like, give me a break.
Tyler, I'm going to tell you, man, look, again, coming back to the central thesis that we opened the program with tonight, we have a conspiracy-fueled economy, we have a conspiracy-fueled public, we have a conspiracy-fueled media.
I think that
these are hot topics. People are going after it. Look at this.
Talk about conspiracy so much that any idea of some kind of collaboration on behalf of markets and different agencies is completely unquestionable. I mean, what are you, a joker? Are you the Joker?
We were actually, what the hell was that? No, we were
going to be the Joker.
We were talking before the program about how that's also become a term, you know. Speaking of Alex Jones, if you haven't seen it online yet, go online and look up Alex Jones' Joker broadcast, where he actually did the entire broadcasting clown makeup.
Make sure you have some Tums while you watch that.
You're going to need them. Yeah, you're going to need them. But anyway, this is just, again, point in case. There's this richly interwoven continuum amidst social networking, public or citizen journalists, and actually just social media in general, mainstream media, and then this culture of conspiracy in which we live. Guys, something big is on the way. I'm deputizing the guys in studio with me and, of course, the listenership here. We've got to be on the watch. We've had to talk about this so often on the program because this is something that cannot be overlooked. It cannot be avoided. There's no way to look around this and see, you know, the stories about the alleged Sasquatch footprint found or the alleged Nessie sightings taking place at Loch Ness or the alleged, you know, UFOs filmed over Ireland recently.
Swamp gas.
We have
looks
to...
like the upper hand is on the other foot.
I don't know where the upper hand is, but you know what? It's hard to even find a foothold any longer. And so, folks, we are living in an absolutely conspiracy-ridden culture. I don't know where we're going from this point on. Well, I really don't.
I have two predictions. One I've talked about before. The market will suffer losses. I want to say this fall, but it looks like it could happen sooner. But I'm going to say this fall. I'm going to stick to that. But also,
okay, let's see if you're right.
This Kansas City thing. So let's watch, see if anything's going on with Kansas
City. God, I hope not. You know, I'm going to be in Kansas City in September, actually. Maybe you guys will be able to join me, but, you know, I'm going to be in Kansas City at the KGRA Radio Network's Paracon with Stanton Friedman, Rich Dolan, and a few other people. I hope you're not right about that, Tyler.
We'll see. I mean, I could just be completely...
You could be blowing that out your conspiracy.
I have this feeling.
Yeah. Well, either way, you know, I was going to say we'll come back to the Dawkins thing, but really that's it. Let's summarize it as follows. Dawkins takes a hardline stance against theism. He tweets about this frequently, and he learned the power of the tweet the hard way this past weekend with making such a statement.
Let's pray for him that Islamic militants do not, give him the 86.
Yeah. Okay. Let's close out the program on a hopeful note here. Someone who was always inspiring to me as an individual, as a thinker, as an enlightened individual, and of course, as a scientist, Nikola Tesla. You know, he had made a number of predictions in his lifetime. And these were, what was the news source that actually carried these? It was the Smithsonian. Smithsonian Mag actually carried this, and I found this very interesting. Our friends at the Smithsonian, our friends up there at the Smithsonian in Washington, they had said, they'd actually compiled this list of these predictions that Tesla had made during his lifetime. Here are a few of them. Take it for what you will. I found them somewhat interesting. Number one, the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency, the creation of the agency was still 35 years away, but Tesla had predicted a very similar agency's creation within 100 years when he said, quote, hygiene, physical culture will be recognized branches of education and government. The Secretary of Hygiene, or a physical culture, will be far more important in the cabinet of the President of the United States, who holds office in the year 2035, than the Secretary of War will. The pollution of our beaches, such as exists today around New York City, will seem an unthinkable to our children and our grandchildren, as life without plumbing seems to us. Our water supply will be far more carefully supervised, and only a lunatic will drink unsterilized water. Tesla
Big
said
Berkey
that.
Water filters.
There you go. Exactly. He also talked about education, war, and the newspapers of tomorrow, where he imagined a world where new scientific discoveries rather than war would become a priority for humanity. I hope he was right. Here's what he had to say. Today, the most civilized countries of the world spend a maximum of their income on war and a minimum on education. The 21st century will reverse this order. It will be more glorious to fight against ignorance than to die on the field of battle. The discovery of a new scientific truth will be more important than the squabbles of diplomats. Even the newspapers of our own day are beginning to treat scientific discoveries and the creation of fresh philosophical concepts as news. The newspapers of the 21st century will give a mere stick in the back pages to accounts of crime or political controversies, but will, listen to this, but will headline on front pages the proclamation of a new scientific hypothesis. That last line, once again, the newspapers of the 21st century will give a mere stick in the back pages to accounts of crime or political controversies, but headline on front pages the proclamation of new scientific hypotheses. I'll give him 50-50 on that one, because we do see a lot of scientific reportage, but by the same token, as we've talked about throughout the course of tonight's program, political controversies are still the mainstay of American media and politics. Health and diet was something else that he discussed toward the end of his life. Tesla developed rather strange theories about optimum human diet. He dined himself on little more than milk and honey in his final days, believing that this was the purest form of food. And, of course, as a result, he lost an enormous amount of weight. He looked rather ghastly by the early 1940s, just before his death. This meager diet and his gaunt appearance contributed to the common misconception that he was penniless at the end of his life. I didn't realize that that was a misconception. And of course, one of our folks in the chat room tonight named themselves after Tesla's pigeon.
Yeah, he did had $10.
He maintained a something of a relationship with a pigeon there towards the end of his life, and that's actually true. He talked about that, I believe, in an interview with Time magazine just before he passed. But anyway, here's what Tesla had to say about people's diets in the future. He said, more people die or grow sick from polluted water than from coffee, tea, tobacco, and other stimulants. I myself eschew all stimulants. I also practically abstain from meat. I'm convinced that within a century, coffee, tea, and tobacco will no longer be in vogue. Too bad. Alcohol, however, will still be used. He was right after all. It's not a stimulant, but a veritable elixir of life, he says. Does that mean that he actually liked alcohol?
No, it means that most life is conceived under the influence of alcohol.
Social lubricants and stimulation. But he said the abolition of stimulants will not come about forcibly. It will simply no longer be fashionable to poison the system with harmful ingredients.
Except if you have your children on Ritalin or Adderall.
Right, yes. Or Ricin, which apparently,
Even hit that whole fiasco where the guy was set free.
We're going to have to do another hour, aren't we, guys?
Well, let me just, if we're closing up, here's some new information straight off of CNN.com. We talked about this. To Hurt and Dorner, the hunt for Black Rambo, they get millions. The U.S. sues Lance Armstrong. And why cheap bombs are dangerous. In case you didn't know, they've got an article about that.
Who does?
CNN.
CNN.com?
Bombs dangerous? What?
Cheap bombs are especially dangerous.
Guys, actually, based on what you just told me, Tyler, I think I'm going to go ahead and put forward an idea for a new political movement. Some folks want to get guns off the streets. I think we should get bombs off the streets and make them illegal.
Yeah, cheap ones.
Yeah, we should definitely make bombs illegal.
Bombs are dangerous. Bombs are a danger to humanity. I think Tesla would have said that they were. Bombs should be taken off the streets. Okay, real quick.
I hope people know we're joking.
Two final points. Robots and cheap energy. Tesla's work in robotics began in the 1890s. Did you know that? Tesla was working with robotics in the 1890s. He said, I actually constructed robots. Today, the robot is an accepted fact, but the principle has not been pushed far enough. In the 21st century, the robot will take the place which slave labor occupied in ancient civilization. There's no reason at all why most of this should not come to pass in less than a century. freeing mankind to pursue its higher aspirations. Tesla said that.
Yeah, Tesla is going to come back like Nixon on Futurama with a big mechanized body and his head in a glass jar.
He missed the mark. Slave robots will still be a flesh and blood variety. Their minds will just be controlled.
Okay, well, I want to wrap this up with, you know, I was talking with Phyllis Galdi, the publisher and editor of Fate Magazine, today on the telephone, and she and I were talking about a documentary film that was made a few years ago called Who Killed the Electric Car? Do you guys know about this?
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yeah, okay. And with regard to cheap energy and the manufacture, or rather the management of natural resources, long before the next century dawns, systematic reforestation and the scientific management of natural resources will have made an end of all devastating droughts, according to Tesla. He had said that apparently he believed that the universal utilization of water power, okay, and its long-distance transmission will supply every household with cheap power and will dispense with the necessity of burning fuel. The struggle, okay, watch me lose my place here in the final moments of the program. The struggle for existence being less than there should be development along rather ideal rather than less. Or rather, I can't even talk. See, he's going over my head. He had said, the struggle for existence being less than there should be development along rather ideal rather than material lines. I don't know what about
sounds
that sentence
like
is so
an
difficult.
Info war.
Well, apparently it was. Anyway, that wraps it up for this week's edition of the program. I'm Micah Hanks. On behalf of Caleb Hanks, Tyler Pittman, Matthew Oakley, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, and all of us here at the Graylian Report, thank you for spending another week with us and asking questions. info@graylianreport.com will put you in direct contact with us if you'd like to share your ideas. Maybe you can read the Tesla story better than I did, but nonetheless, I think it's the information that prevails. Maybe Tesla was right about those some things, and we, like Tesla, maintain a hopeful and resolute vision for the future of humanity. Email us, info@graylianreport, if you'd like to share those sorts of things. Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. And, of course, as always, my friends, stay strange. We're going to wrap it up now. Until next time, we'll talk to you again. Maintain positivity.
You've been listening to the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website, graylianreport.com.